You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Roto Experts in the Morning is on now.
Welcome back to the Roto Experts in the Morning special edition of the Roto Experts. Greg Sussman, Tony Cicada, the King Scott Angle on vacation, as is the fantasy executive. We're breaking down a little bit of what you need to know in fantasy baseball as you dust off the cobwebs and give you an education on how to get back in the mix when it comes to fantasy football. Because you know what? It's over. You got to put away the fantasy football to the end of the year. And we talk about it time and time again. We're all fantasy players, right? You're listening to the station. You're hardcore. You got to stay in it, and you got to play a little fantasy baseball out there.
You have no choice. You think people, you got no choice.
Yeah, you got to play. You got to play. And I can understand that people get, you know, more and more. When I first got into it, I couldn't believe, like, when I got into this thing, I couldn't believe people played head-to-head fantasy baseball. I thought it was the dumbest thing in the world, right? But I get it. Like, especially for the people that play football that don't have a lot of time, it's the closest thing to it.
Yes,
and
exactly.
So, and it's different strategy involved when you play head-to-head as opposed to the roto style. And I think that each is unique. And, like, I don't detest it as much as I did when I first came in the league. And a guy I worked with a long time, Ray Flowers, he basically laughs at the people and he thinks you guys, or IQ, are very low compared to the normal human being walking around the earth. I'm not that guy. I tell Ray it's like just two different things. You have head-to-head, you have roto. And it's just two different things, and people are allowed to choose. You've got to have tolerance these days, Greg Sussman.
Absolutely. So I do, of course, the weekly changes, your rotisserie league. I think it's a 12. I do a 12-team rotisserie league baseball, weekly changes. And I do my head-to-head that I've done forever, and I've done the other one for a little while, and I do the industry ones that I've seen. And I get it. Maybe it's my brain capacity or whatever, but I find the head-to-head ones, the daily changes with head-to-head, so much more entertaining. I get so bored by the rotisserie one that I'm just not as intently looking at it, making changes every day, being able to bench guys that are cold, start guys that are hot. And again, maybe it's brain capacity, but I find the head-to-head just much more fun.
No, you like to tinker, so that
I do.
Suits
I do. You're right.
Your style of play, right?
You're 100%
right. You
like
to make a lot of moves.
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing, is find something you like and something, because this is the bottom line is, you know, some of us play for money, whatever, but it's about entertainment.
Agreed.
You're not gonna change it. So whatever suits you's there. Like, here's the way it works for me. Is if I play in that type of league, I lose my mind, because what happens is I get busy for a couple days and I forget to change my lineup.
Right.
And then I get so pissed off that I didn't change my lineup that I just say F it and then I don't do it the rest of the year, because I get so mad about 2 days that I missed my lineup.
And I'm the other way around, right? Like, so I'm doing my daily changes every single day of my team. Like, a closer goes down right now, I'm going to go pick somebody up. That whole deal too. And then I'm wondering, I get to my weekly changes league, and I'm like, oh, I can't make this pickup till Friday anyway. So why don't I'll worry about it later in the week. And then I forget about it. And then I miss out on all these free agents. And then I don't care anymore.
That's why you got to get in a league that's suitable for you. And you got to know. And if you don't know, you just do it 1 year. And then you find something else the next year.
So going back to what we were talking about before the break. And that was, you know, in regards to Charlie Blackman versus Miguel Cabrera. I want to get, before we get into position scarcity a little bit, Tony, I do want to give you more time to break those two down, because I felt like we're kind of up against the break and I didn't want to, you know, lose that, because I think these two are very similar. Like you pointed out, Charlie Blackman, you drafted him in an auction and you were kind of let down, but if you project him for even 35 steals, he got 17. He got half of that. And that could theoretically kill you. He did have 29 home runs. Now, Miguel Cabrera, on the other hand, I'm not sure what you projected him at last year, but I don't know if it was 38 and 108 again. He has just been ever consistent. You know he plays every day. I always lean personally Miguel Cabrera just for what he has done year after year after year. Now, you said Charlie Blackman. Now, how come you lean that way?
The only reason I lean that way is because I'm going to get five categories there as opposed to four, and I can get a first baseman. Now, the outfield, I'm not going to have an easy time getting.
And I'll talk about that in a minute with the whole Miguel Cabrera. Now, Cabrera, I would have never thought he would hit 38 home runs. We're talking about a guy that's 33, almost 34 years old. He's had a long career in this league, and you look for these guys to break down at some point. He was coming off a year where he only hit 18 home runs after 511 at-bats. He hit a .338 batting average, but all of a sudden the power was gone, right? He hit 25 home runs the year before in 2014. There is no way in hell I would have predicted he hit 38 home runs. Now, the question is, what do you predict this year? 25, 18, and then 38 of the last 3 years.
Right.
I think you pencil the guy in at 30 home runs.
Okay.
And probably 90 runs scored and 100 RBIs and a .300 batting average, which is great numbers.
Sure.
Yeah, you just get the no stolen bases there. So I look at Charlie Blackmon. I'm going to get close to a .300 batting average. I'm going to get 20-something home runs. And I'm going to get 20-something stolen bases. So I'm just going to take that, and the position is going to come into play for me with the first baseman. I feel like I can get those close to those numbers with Miguel Cabrera a little later on. I can't let outfielders go and get them later in the draft.
Now, why has outfield become such a scarce position all of a sudden? I mean, maybe it's not all of a sudden. Maybe just in my head it feels like all of a sudden. But it's funny because I look down at, again, I'm looking at the NFBC average draft position. You get your first two of Trout and Betts, and you get to like Bryce Harper, who's, you know, around the top 15 or so. And then after that, you have Charlie Blackmon. And then you got a while before you get to like Starling Marte, who steals a lot of bases, and that's great. And then you keep going and keep going. You get to George Springer, and he's fine. And A.J. Pollock, and he's good. But you get a while before you just get an all-around player like Charlie Blackmon, a five-category player like Charlie Blackmon.
Yeah, so here's what happened in Major League Baseball. So if you play like an NFBC, it's 15 teams, so you got five outfielders. That's 75 outfielders you're going deep.
Right.
If you play in a 12-team league, it's 60 outfielders, and that's not including using one at utility, and that's not including picking some backups. What people don't realize is that Major League Baseball is just like anything else. It's cut into the use of specialization, and right fielders and left fielders on a lot of teams in Major League Baseball platoon. So sure. I have less to choose from each and every week. And if I'm talking about 75 outfielders, when it gets to the end of the draft, to think that I'm going to get a guy that plays every day, never mind a guy that's a quality player, I'm even going to have a problem getting a guy that plays every day.
Good point. It's a great point. You just need somebody that's not platooning, that's just going to be in there every single day. And you can plug into your lineup in a weekly league and not worry about it.
Yeah, and believe me, when you go 75 outfielders, now if you're in a 10-team league, it's less of a concern for you. And if you play three outfielder leagues, it's less of a concern for
right,
you.
Right.
If you're playing in five outfielder leagues and you have 12 teams or 15 teams, at the end of the draft, you're going to be surprised at the outfielders you have to choose from.
Yep.
And you're going to realize that some of these guys don't play against lefties, don't play in righties. And you got to learn the platoon splits. Because here's the thing, I am okay with putting a guy that plays in a platoon if he is a left-handed hitter. Because that
right.
means he's going to go against righty pitching, which happens at least 85% of the time.
Exactly.
But I don't want to get involved the other way. So you don't ever want to have a guy that's a right-handed bat that's in a platoon situation because he's just not going to play enough, no matter how good he is.
Right. So if you had the lefty side of the platoon, you're going to start seemingly and theoretically 5 out of the 7 days of the week.
Yep, absolutely. Now, you might lose a couple at bats later in the game each and every week, but you can live with that.
Totally. Okay. Fact or alternative fact, Tony, that after Clayton Kershaw, after Max Scherzer, and after Madison Bumgarner, Chris Sale should be the first pitcher off the board?
Fiction.
Alternative fact.
Alternative fact.
There's no fiction.
No, there is no lie. See, I forgot where I was. I thought I was in 2008.
Or you could have said 2016 if you wanted.
Chris Sale, I want to root for this guy, and I want this guy. I mean,
of course,
hell,
you're
a Red
right.
Sox fan, right? But I got to look at the numbers. Like, I never look at the names. I never look at the truth.
Right. You are not biased in your analysis. You are objective.
No. Right. This is a guy that's gone the other way. I mean, there's still great numbers, but we're looking at 2014 is K per nines with 10.76. 2011, 11.82. Then it dropped 9.25. That's 2.6 drop in one season. Mm-hmm. That is a number that's alarming to me. We're looking at a FIP that went from 2.73 to 3.46. We want an XFIP that went from 2.60 to 3.58. All these numbers are trending the wrong way. This is a guy that they were concerned about in his career, that his delivery was so bad that they wanted to use him in the bullpen because his elbow would never stay. His miles per hour on his fastball are down 2 miles per hour coming into the year. Now, a little rest, new place, yeah, it could cure everything. But if I'm talking about the fourth pitcher in the draft, I'm not taking a risk.
I can't do it. I can't do it. And it's so funny because I said this to you a couple of weeks ago when we discussed Chris Sale. And that was that when he came up, those elbow injuries or that because of his delivery always was in the back of my mind. Like no matter what I did, when it came time to drafting somebody, I always had that in the back of my mind that Chris Sale, the White Sox wanted to throw him in the bullpen. And he's going to break down at some point. And I could not get it out that when there was a another pitcher to choose from, I seemingly always went the other way. And I can't stop that. So if not Chris Sale, who? Right? Like that's the obvious question. If it's not Chris Sale, who?
You know, and it's interesting that the name I'm going to throw out here is a guy that had some injury situations, but I think they're actually overblown, a lot of them, is Noah Syndergaard of the New York Mets. His K per 9 is 10.68, and despite all the injury issues that we talked about last year with Syndergaard and having to miss a start, he pitched 183 innings.
So pretty much full year.
Yeah, the year before that, he pitched 179 innings between AAA and the New York Mets. And I think I definitely give an advantage to National League pitchers as opposed to American League pitchers. If you get to a point that you're close, always look at that. If you look at the first three pitchers, they're all National League pitchers. They're going to face a pitcher three times through the batting order and have the ability at two strikeouts out of those three. Now, the next guy I would probably go and throw into the discussion is a guy that I think he's safe, and that's Corey Kluber of the Cleveland Indians.
Okay.
I don't think a lot of people will pick him that early, but I look at a guy that's K per 9 is going to be right there at 9. I'm looking at a guy that doesn't walk anybody, and he seems to get better each and every season, and I don't have to worry about a fluctuation with him. He had a 3.49 ERA in 2015, which is not great, coming off a 2.44 season prior to that, 3.14 last year. So I'm seeing 3 years of success here. I'm seeing the strikeout totals, 9.50, 9.33, 10.27. So I could know when I'm going to get there. And I look at a Cleveland Indians team that's actually going to be better than they were last year. But even if they were just as good, I'm talking 18 wins. You can't predict wins, but I know that he's going to be in the ballpark there. I'm going to tell you the guy that I would wait on and pick that right now, and that's Chris Archer. I think the whole thing is to find guys that have the off year and basically hammer them. Now, Chris Archer was a guy that tried a new pitch in spring training last year, and he basically, that's all he threw in spring training, and he said it screwed him up. And when you have a reason for something, that's always a plus than a guy just coming off. But even in a bad year where he lost 19 games and had a 4.02 ERA, his strikeout totals were 10.42. The year before that, 10.70, 3.23. I wouldn't pick the fourth pitcher. I would try to grab Chris Archer in the third round.
Interesting. Interesting stuff. Do you happen to, and I know you named Syndergaard, obviously. Then you named Kluber and Archer. If there was like a tie, essentially, in my rankings, I always leaned National League. Is that something you do as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that when you get, you take out the DH of the pitcher, like people don't realize that DH, a lot of times a third or fourth hitter, and instead you're going to get a pitcher there, and then you have the catcher spot that's a little weaker over there. It's just a whole different game. I think you have to, and you have managers that will give up outs with the batter, with the pitcher at bat and the bunt. And it just changes the whole complexion of the game. I think it has to be.
I think so, too. You know, you forget that, like, it's not just taking out the DH, right? It's putting in a pitcher. So it doesn't sound like much, but it changes the whole complexion of a lineup.
It definitely does. I mean, and you look at guys that, I didn't even mention. I mean, You got Leicester and Arrieta, both over in the National League. They're guys that you could take.
Sure.
That early, a lot of people, you know, Carlos Martinez, people have written off. And he doesn't get the strikeout totals of an elite pitcher, but he's a safe play. I think if you look at it, a lot of that action is in the National League. And it's crazy to say to me, I am shocked. And it's only one pitcher. Like, Jose Fernandez. Mm-hmm. And the untimely death of him has really changed, to me, the elite pitching in Major League Baseball, where I look at a guy like Jose Fernandez, and he would have been the third pitcher that was taken.
Yep.
And to me, him and Madison Baumgartner are worlds of difference. The 9.97 strikeout rate is great for Baumgartner last year. But we look at him over a career, 9.65, 9.07. He's never been an elite strikeout. He's been good with the 9 and get one strikeout per inning. And his ERA is always under 3. He just doesn't supply you with the confidence of a Jose Fernandez and the electricity of having those 15, 16 strikeout games. For Baumgartner, is a consistent thing, and there's nothing wrong with that. But we get so excited over Jose Fernandez being on our team, and now it's amazing how one pitcher removed from the prospect to play in Major League Baseball has really changed the pitching dynamics.
Speaking of untimely deaths, I think we have to mention now the untimely death yesterday of Yordano Ventura. A pitcher, of course, starting pitcher for the Kansas City Royals, won a World Series with them. And both him and former top prospect Andy Marte both passed away in separate car crashes in the Dominican Republic. And Ventura, probably because of the football yesterday, we almost fell by the wayside. Like we all woke up yesterday morning to this news. And we're like, oh, my God. And then you kind of forget about it as the day goes on because of the football. But that's a crazy story, right? We've lost Jose Fernandez and Yordano Ventura in a couple months.
I'll tell you what was crazy yesterday morning is I put up some polls, which I generally do on Twitter, first thing in the morning, and one of them was Bounce Back Candidate of the Year, and Yordano Ventura was involved in that poll.
Sure.
And it's about 11 a.m. I found out, you know, about the death of Yordano, so I deleted the poll. But it's amazing how this guy came into the league and made such a big emphasis in a postseason run of the Kansas City Royals. And then it seemed to get away from him last season, and he wasn't as good as we expected. He had 11-12 total and a 6.97 ERA and 4.45 ERA. But you had all the expectations that if this guy could cool down his, you know, off the field, on field demeanor, where he got a little boisterous at times, could be a solid pitcher in Major League Baseball. Now, again, 25 years old, we have no idea how crazy this is to see these young players and pass away before their prime, and a guy like Ventura was a guy that you're like, oh, you know, he had excitement, could turn around in Major League career, and it's crazy what goes on in young people like this passing away at this stage is crazy.
And we've seen a lot
recently. You think everybody's immortal, right? You think everybody, you look at it, especially when we're young, and then we think, like I remember growing up there, and to me, the first time it really shook me up about somebody dying was Darryl Kyle, the former St. Louis Cardinals.
Because he was close to your age, right?
Yeah, he was close to my age. I'm like, man, that guy went to bed in a hotel, and he died. He never woke up,
right.
And he had a family and kids. And you forget sometimes because you think of these guys as baseball players, and they're infallible, and you can't touch them. And you forget that they have families and kids.
Yordano Ventura was a bit of a hothead on the mound, right? He feuded with like the Texas Rangers and the Baltimore Orioles. And, you know, he had some anger issues, people said, but he could throw a fastball, that's for sure, and he was very, very talented. Whether he's talented or not, it's a very, very sad story. And to wake up, and Ventura was always this guy, just talking from a fantasy baseball perspective, he was on my team every year. Like, I always bought into the upside of Yordano Ventura, and you posted a poll about a bounce-back player. Ventura's on it, right? He's on that list every year because he was so talented, and it's a shame to hear what happened. And it was just a couple of years ago, I think it was during the playoffs, where he put Oscar Tavares' initials on his hat, and Tavares passed away. It's crazy what is happening right now. And all these younger players, it's sad to say, but you get a little bit of money, or maybe a lot of money, and we think they're immortal, Tony, as fantasy baseball players and as baseball fans, but they think they're immortal too. And both Fernandez and Ventura found to be under the influence at the times of their passings. And they think they're immortal too. Anything can happen to them. Nothing can happen to them. They can do whatever they want. And unfortunately, that's just not the case.
And that's the tough part, that as fantasy analysts, that we go and we try to assess these players by using statistical numbers, and where it's infallible is that we don't know what a 23-year-old kid with millions of dollars is doing off the field. Because I think about it, and I'm honest with myself, my life would be a disaster off the field too if I had millions of dollars and was 23 years of old and you didn't know how to handle it. Because a lot of times, you grow up and then all of a sudden you have that much money and you have the wrong people hanging around you. And I could see how it gets out of the way. And you just don't know.
You don't, and that's where I want to pause just for a second, because we have this image of players on the field and what they do and the types of personalities, and like we joke all the time on the show, Tony, in particular, Aaron Rodgers is the dick. Well, everyone hates this guy, and like we know Aaron Rodgers on the field, and we see this great quarterback who the announcers just gush over, and we kind of have this image when it comes out about his family and he's not giving his cell phone number and all these stories about him. Like, all right, this guy's a dick, but like there's so many guys we know nothing about off the field, and your Pac-Man Joneses and your Aqib Talibs, that these are amazing players on the field, and off the field they get into a lot of trouble. And there's players that don't get into trouble and they're awesome on the field, but they off the field we don't know anything about them. There's a lot more here. I want to continue the conversation, but let's take a break first. We'll pause and get back to this, because there's a lot more here. Stick around. This is the Roto Experts of the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. It's crazy to me how little we know about players off the court, right? Like, it's off the court or off the field or whatever. I joked about Aaron Rodgers. We're talking a little bit about Yordano Ventura's untimely death here. Not that any death is timely, but right? It's kind of like the thing, Tony, right? Dying too young. Like, when is too young? When are you okay to die?
Right.
Like, it's like saying a death is ever timely. But I think even to like a guy like Richie Incognito, who is this massive bully in the Bullygate scandal, and then he comes back, he's this pro bowler, like, we don't know anything about this guy on the field. And then Michael Vick, like, he was a superstar guy, everyone loves Michael Vick. Then then we found out that he, ran a dogfighting ring. We don't know anything about these people.
No, and that's the hard part of trying to predict the unpredictable, is like, you just have no idea. How many times do we talk about these shows about contract years, right?
Of course.
And are you going to tell, like, what did they change in their life, in their pattern? Did they stop going to bars till 4 in the morning?
Absolutely.
Did they go to the gym more? Like, you don't know. You have no idea.
Correct.
Like, all of a sudden, did you work out in the off season when you never did that before?
So, to me, that's why, like, I buy into that contract year narrative. Because there's certain guys that are about the money that are like, you know what? I'm not, exactly what you just said. I'm not going to drink until 4 a.m. every night, right? Like, I'm not going to do all these drugs and whatever. I'm going to just start working out more because I know I have a chance at hundreds of millions of dollars here. But for every one of those guys, there's a Johnny Manziel who doesn't give a crap, that's just going to party because he has the money to.
Yeah, and there's also the part that, like, guys that put a lot of pressure on themselves don't come through and they cave in. So that's something you got to worry about, too, is, like, guys that don't handle the pressure well in the contract situation. I remember Andrew Jones in the Atlanta Braves organization was one of the great, great players, and then he had a contract coming up,
right,
and they put so much pressure on him, and he hit about 210,
sure,
and he hit 20 home runs, 30 home run a guy. And you see things like that from guys as well.
Oh, absolutely. And I always looked, it was funny because I looked at Adrian Beltre before, and I feel right about this run. Like, so Adrian Beltre was a young kid, obviously incredibly young, when the Dodgers signed him. And he was a Dominican baseball player, and he comes over here, not unlike a guy, let's say, like Aroldis Chapman, right? He was signed, how old was he when he was signed? He was signed, let's see here, he was born in 1979. He was signed in 1994. So he was, what, 15 years old when he was signed? And at 15, he comes over from the Dominican Republic, 15 years old, 130 pounds, and given $23,000 to come play minor league baseball with the Dodgers. And throughout his time with L.A., it was kind of like a little underwhelming, I thought. And he was okay. Great fielder, of course. The average was never really all that good. Pallet power, but he's okay. And that contract year comes up. And again, this was in the middle of the steroid era, no doubt. Contract year comes up, and he just goes crazy, right? He leads the MLB with 48 home runs after averaging 18 the previous 5 years. His batting average, which averaged at 265, went to 334. He had 200 hits, 121 RBIs, 104 runs scored, and finished second in the MVP. And I'm like, okay, this is a contract year guy that clearly I don't want to call Adrian Beltre after taking steroids, but like clearly enhanced his performance somehow on his contract year. And then that was it. And all of a sudden, I would never have picked him the next year in fantasy baseball. Goes to the Mariners, and what did he do? Had a 255, 19 home runs, the same exact thing he did before he had the contract year. A year later, again, not a good year. And then all of a sudden, the second half of the year, he got a little bit better, 276, 26 home runs he finished. And then it just continued to get better as he got older. And to me, Tony, this is again a personal thing, because as Adrian Beltre matured into an adult, right, besides the contract year where Scott Boras obviously told him, listen, you have a chance to make $100 million, this guy was a kid. He was a kid that got rich at 15 years old, and then he let it get to his head a little bit. Like, obviously, once Adrian Beltre got older and more mature, he probably stopped partying and spending his money on women and drugs and alcohol, and he got older, and there's so many guys like that.
You know what's crazy about the whole thing, the Scott Boras situation, who is Adrian Beltre's agent, is that how much do you think the agents get involved in this situation? And when I look at Boras, right, and I look at guys like Jacoby Ellsbury, who did something very similar in his free agent year, put together a monster year, who is the only guy that has nothing to lose with a player taking steroids?
Who is the only guy with nothing to lose? The agent.
Right. And I wonder how much they're involved in these types of situations and getting these guys prepared for contract years. When I look at Boras' clients and I see Jacoby Ellsbury, I see Alex Rodriguez, I see Adrian Beltre, I look and I say, man, you know, it's one thing to get these guys prepared, but how far are these guys going? Like, this is something unpredictable, too. Like, when you look at the whole situation involving this agent, off-the-field situations, and these guys, agents to me, have nothing to Mark Teixeira, another guy that here. I just look at this, and I'm like, man, it's such a tricky sport on how, where you go, and there's so much money involved that it's like the Wild Wild West.
It is. It is. Now, you can, like, your reputation could be ruined, right? Like, if Adrian Beltre comes out and is like, yeah, Scott Boras made me take steroids. And then another guy comes out and says, Scott Boras made me take steroids. I mean, that could ruin you. So that's the only thing that could kill you, I guess, as the agent. But reputation-wise, as long as it doesn't come out that you had anything to do with it, I mean, you're gold.
And he's always made people money, and it's crazy because there's a lot of times, oh, Boras screwed up, you know, there's only a couple teams that need players, and this guy's always sound last. But what people don't realize, and this actually is a tribute to fantasy baseball, if you're in an auction, and say there's four tier first basemen, say you have Paul Goldschmidt, Anthony Rizzo, Miguel Cabrera, all ranked the same, which you can argue to make the case.
Okay.
Well, what people don't realize is, once the other two go, you get a bidding war for that third guy, and it usually goes more than the other two.
Yep.
And that's what Boras does in free agency.
Right.
And people always kill this guy, but his guys never have not got the money. The only guy I can remember not getting the money was Ian Desmond last year.
Sure. And Mark, Wieters is interesting, right? Like, Wieters is an interesting one, like this year.
Yeah, because that's what people are pointing to this year.
Yeah.
And I said, he's still going to get paid. Boras, he knows what he's doing, and he always gets, those guys always get their money.
When you think about, like, Max Scherzer and Jason Worth, two guys nobody thought would get paid, and the Nationals gave them, you know, $350 million combined.
Yeah, it's just, the guy knows what he's doing. He's played the game, and I think he has situations here where all these guys, you look at Boras in their free agent year, come up big. Now, he was Andrew Jones' agent that year in Atlanta, and he's the only guy that I believe that didn't come up big for him. in his free agent contract year. Jason Worth, a guy that he got ungodly money when Jason Worth was a good player, but never an outstanding player.
Yeah, he basically being friends or in the know with the Lerners in Washington, they made a splash. And there's obviously that connection with Boris in Washington, and he's gotten his players paid. So you could hate Scott Boras all you want. Guy's very good at his job, much like Drew Rosenhaus with the NFL.
Yeah, Drew Rosenhaus. Now, I think Drew, I think he's not as popular as he once was. I don't think he has,
agree with that.
Some of the bigger name clients anymore.
Yeah, agents come and go, right? Like, I know Scott Boras is one of the few that have been long lasting, but like, who is the dude Jerry Maguire was based off of? Then he had like a major drug and alcohol problem, right? That guy, he just
Lee
came
Steinberg,
back. Yeah, Lee Steinberg, right?
Yeah, he's one of my actually, I'm friends with him on Facebook, and it's interesting to see his life because he's really trying to revive his game in the agent industry, and he's got things going on now, and he's trying to get part in it. And he's had a drug and alcohol problem, and it seems like, you know what, he's trying to help people out with that as well and getting reviving around his career. So
I know that he's back signing college players. Yeah, I know he's like really trying to revive it. So, all right, we'll take a break here. We'll get more baseball tomorrow, more facts and alternative facts for sure. We've done a lot of the top 20. We'll continue on here. Asking about other players and comparative players. And as we get deeper and deeper into fantasy draft season, we'll be able to compare rounds and players and values and all that good stuff. Tomorrow we'll also have the FSCA draft to go over. So a lot of baseball coming your way. This is the first week you really wanted to dive into baseball head first and go wall to wall with you with football having only one game left and basketball, certainly in the mix. But baseball, it's time to start prepping. So we'll get into all that tomorrow. When we come back, Tony and I will look at the NBA from last night. We'll make lineups coming up this half hour. Stick around. This is the Roto Experts in the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. All right, back here on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Coming up next, it'll be the fantasy best friends forever. Jake Seeley is without Nando DeFino, who is in Nashville for the FSTA, without Corey Parson, who is off today, without Chris Meany, who is a normal fill-in guest. He's also in Nashville. So Jake Seeley will be joined by me, Craig Sussman. I'll be hanging out with Jake up until 11 o'clock, and a little Sussman Seeley revival for you. Tony, let's get into some NBA action from this weekend, which was a bad weekend for me in fantasy basketball.
Yeah, you had a little tough time going
2 weeks. It's been a bad 2 weeks, honestly.
You know, now the NBA's over. NFL's over. You're so focused now. It's a new revival. Get things going now.
Yes, and I have nothing else to focus on except preparing for my fantasy baseball draft and getting ready here for my basketball team's pickup because I'm trying to win some money. I'm trying to win some money, get back to even. And then make some money. So that's the goal here. And let's start by going over what happened last night, including a 50-point loss by the Los Angeles Lakers to Dallas last night. A Dallas Mavericks team who is awful, 122-73. The Lakers without D'Angelo Russell is going to be out a couple of weeks with that knee injury. So they went big, the Lakers, against the Mavericks, starting Nick Young at point guard, starting Brandon Ingram at shooting guard, essentially, and then Luol Deng, Julius Randle, and Timofey Mozgov as your front court. That didn't work, and they probably should have just started Jose Calderon or Lou Williams or Jordan Clarkson, you know, any of the three point guard on their team, but they didn't, and the Lakers got absolutely murked. This game was really never close because the Lakers scored 11 points in the second quarter, Tony.
It was the worst loss in the history of the Los Angeles Lakers. If you think around, that team's been around a long time. No starter for the Lakers had double-digit points.
Mm-hmm.
That's how bad things were in this contest. And Brandon Ingram, of course, a rookie that they wanted to see what they had. He had 36 minutes of play and delivered 2 of 12 shooting in this contest. The guy that I'm concerned about, his play has really fallen off, is Julius Randle.
Yeah.
He's in a huge slump right now. And you look at it, he had 9 points, 4 rebounds. He had 16 and 4 in a game prior to that. Then he had a game of 7 and 7, 2 and 4, 4-2. Then he had a 22-5, a 6-point game, and 10 rebounds. Like, all of a sudden, this guy's dropped off, and this guy should be a double-double guy. He should put up 10 points and 10 rebounds every night.
He should be, and I have no idea why he's not. This offense really should go through him, especially with D'Angelo Russell hurt, and it's just not, and I don't get why, to be honest with you. It doesn't make any sense to me.
No, me either. Walton did such a great job coming out of the gate with his team.
Yeah.
And now the team's going in the other direction.
Totally. And I don't understand why, to be honest. For the Dallas Mavericks last night, again, such an easy win. Seth Curry played 27 minutes. He had 14 points. So since he's entered the starting lineup for Andrew Bogut, he's been good. He's been worth a pickup in seasonal leagues. Wesley Matthews had 13. Darren Williams had 13 and 8. Dirk had 13 points. Harrison Barnes only had 6 points in this one. It's just tough to take anything out of this, right? Like Justin Anderson, 19 points. And you had Dorian Finney-Smith played 34 minutes. But again, when you win by 50, it's just hard to take anything out.
No, nothing to look at. Basically, you look at Harrison Barnes' numbers, and they were pathetic, but a lot of that was dictated by the score in this game.
Let's go to another drubbing, and that's Golden State defeating Orlando by 20, 118 to 98, 27-6 for Steph Curry. Kevin Durant only had 15 in this one, but he did have 10 rebounds, 6 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. It's a good all-around game there. Draymond had 10 rebounds, only 6 points and 4 assists, while Klay Thompson had 21-5.
Yeah, Draymond, this is the part that's frustrating, because you're getting assists from him and rebounds, but he went 1-for-7 shooting. The part is that he went 0-for-4 from three-point land. Like, he's just firing up shots, and he doesn't shoot that much. And so it's tough sometimes owning him, even though he is contributing in the other categories. Klay Thompson, again, another solid effort. Stephen Curry's actually played very well as of late. As long as he shoots the ball, it'll continue to get the numbers there. Kevin Durant, you know what? It doesn't look like a great night at first with the 15 points. But when you think you get 2 blocks and 3 steals in a roto-style league to go along with the 10 rebounds, it's actually a very good game.
Yep, absolutely. For the Magic last night, you had 23-10 from Elfrid Payton, 12 points piece for C.J. Watson, who's been starting for Evan Fournier since Jody Meeks has gone down. 12 points there. Has C.J. Watson been getting value, Tony?
No. The problem is the assist and steal. Like, this game was better than what we've seen for C.J. Watson with the assist. If he hits a couple more shots, he took 10 shots, so he was 4-10 from there. But before that, he had 5 points, 5 rebounds. He had 9 points, no assists, 3 rebounds. It's tough. I wouldn't put it in. Plus, the Orlando rotation is never predictable one game to the next.
No, it's not. That's what makes Frank Vogel such a hard coach to like for fantasy purposes, because it's just completely unpredictable, right? The starting lineups continually change. Like, the one guy we wanted to trust is Aaron Gordon, who yesterday only had 8 points and 5 assists. Nikola Vucevic had 12 points and Serge Ibaka 10. You have Bismack Biyombo getting minutes off the bench. Like, you have no idea what to expect. And it's funny because, Tony, once Evan Fournier went down, we thought DJ Augustine would be the main beneficiary. He played 5 minutes last night.
That's what I mean. Like, there's no predictability whatsoever.
Although Elfrid Payton's been very good as of late.
He has been really good. I mean, he has been electric, and he played 39 minutes in the game yesterday.
Yep, 39 minutes, and he saw 39 minutes yesterday. 2 days before that on Friday, he saw 37 minutes. In fact, he has been the guy without Fournier. I mean, those numbers, those minutes have just gone up. The point total has gone up. Assists are there. Payton becoming a reliable option for you.
That's the one thing people don't realize when you talk about fantasy sports. Like, you think that the guy that replaces the other guy gets all, the usage rate steps in there. But what happens is you get guys like Elfrid Payton, they'll pick up the usage rate. In Wiggins, when Rubio's out, his goes up 7.5%. So last night you saw Wiggins put in 24 points. That happens time and time again with certain players out, that other guys pick up the pace and not the guy filling in.
Absolutely good point. The Phoenix Suns defeated Toronto yesterday, 115-103. Shocking. And talking about players that have been hot, perhaps no hotter player on the planet right now than Eric Bledsoe, because Bledsoe puts up 40 in this one, coming off back-to-back games, 22-23. 40-13 yesterday with 6 rebounds. He was just absolutely incredible yesterday in this victory in 42 minutes of action. Eric Bledsoe led his team to victory. Devin Booker puts up 20 points, while Tyson Chandler, who has been a really nice find off waiver wires, 16-9.
Yeah, Tyson Chandler is just one of those hard-nosed players, gets the most out of his ability. And he's always going to have a good field goal percentage because he shoots within 3 feet of the basket when he shoots.
Right, exactly.
So a double-double guy. Bledsoe is amazing because in daily fantasy, at least on DraftKings, he was under $7,000 last night, and he puts up another big, big night. He went to the free throw line 14 times. Devin Booker's absolutely playing better than he did at the start of the season. The Phoenix team, as bad as they are, and they're 15-29, they got a lot of fantasy options here. When you look at Booker and Bledsoe and Tyson Chandler, there are certain games where I'll use a Warren or a Tucker
right
off the bench. So there are fantasy options here.
They certainly are. For the Toronto Raptors, all five starters in double digits, and this bench just keeps getting seemingly smaller and smaller as Norman Powell only saw 6 minutes here off the bench. Now, Corey Joseph got time, and Terrence Ross got time, and Jared Sullinger playing that backup center role 12 minutes here off the bench, but it was all five starters being in double digits. DeMar DeRozan led the way with 22 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds in 37 minutes. Kyle Lowry, 15-6-4 in 37 minutes, while Lucas Nogueira had 35 minutes in his return, 13-5, and Jonas Valanciunas 16-12. Damari Carroll scores 14. All five starters saw at least 30 minutes of time.
Yeah, so Valanciunas, even with Sullinger there now playing 31 minutes, he still got 16 points, 12 rebounds. A good game for him there. Kyle Lowry struggled with the shooting, was at 30% on the night, 5-for-17. He shot 9 three-pointers and was 1-for-9. Sometimes I'm baffled by these guys with all these three-point shots.
Yeah, it's funny. I feel like that's not sometimes you're baffled. I feel like most times you're baffled.
Like, DeRozan is probably the guy, right? You look for three-pointers,
yes.
But all of a sudden Kyle Lowry shoots 9 of them. DeRozan shoots 1.
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any sense. And then in the best game of the night, the Timberwolves defeated the Nuggets 111-108 without Ricky Rubio. It was Chris Dunn getting the start, maybe a glimpse of the future here. 10-9-8 for Chris Dunn with 3 steals. 32-12-7 for Karl Anthony Towns. 24-4-4 for Andrew Wiggins. And it was Zach LaVine doing nothing yesterday.
They do better when he does nothing. Like, I'm starting
to
watch
this
right. Trent. They are a way better team when this guy just shoots the ball 8 times or less.
Way better team.
I've been watching this for a couple of weeks, and it's going to be interesting to see what this team does going forward because they are definitely taking a little bit away from LaVine, and he's starting to see Karl Anthony Towns really explode. And Gorgui Dieng never has a big game, it seems, when Karl Anthony Towns goes off. He only played 17 minutes last night. He was 2-for-3 from the field in 4 minutes. Shabazz Muhammad was the guy, 33 minutes in this one, 20 points, 5 rebounds. Whenever there's an injury and Muhammad's in the starting lineup, I play him all the time.
Understandably so.
He's a very good player that just doesn't get an opportunity on this team. I told you about Wiggins when Rubio's out there. Rubio's supposed to be back Tuesday. It was a personal reason. I'm not sure exactly what happened there, but he will be back on Tuesday night to play.
You look at it as a personal thing for Ricky Rubio, and you're absolutely right, Tony. You actually pointed out these trends with Gorgui Dieng and Karl Anthony Towns, and then Zach LaVine too. And I've noticed even more so since you pointed it out, just paying attention a little bit, that when Zach LaVine is not, because he's always going to play over 30 minutes, when he's not just chucking up shots, this team is just much, much better. And maybe he's the one that needs to go.
It wouldn't shock me if he was the one that needs to go. He's just so gifted athletically. I think that he was a given that he would stay, and he could play both the point guard and the shooting guard there. But it wouldn't shock me if he was the one to go in this team. Ricky Rubio is interesting because he's improved so much defensively over the last 2 years. And Thibodeau's a defensive coach. I just have a hard time believing that he would trade him.
I know. I agree with you. For Denver yesterday, Nikola Jokic continues his run, 18 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals. He's up to like around $10,000 now in daily fantasy.
Yeah, here's the problem with Jokic, right? You don't see it, but you got to look a little deeper. The coach called him out about a month ago saying,
okay,
hey, this is a guy that's hurting the team because he can't stay out of foul trouble, and
right,
he needs to learn how to stay out. Last night, same thing. 5 fouls, that's why he only played 27 minutes. It wasn't that they were limiting him. and he had 18, 8, and 4, and 3. So he was on his way to another, you know, 25, 13, 7, because he would have played 32 or 33 minutes. That's the one concern with this guy, that defensively he's challenged.
The return of Gary Harris brought 22, 6, and 3 to the Nuggets, while Will Barton only saw 26 minutes with Harris back, scored 1 point.
Is Kenneth Faried going to give back his paycheck for this game?
This is an unbelievable line. 14 minutes, 0 points, 0 assists, 0 shots for Kenneth Faried.
Yeah. I don't know what's more of a surprise. 0 shots from a guy that's out there 14 minutes, or Will Barton, who's a chucker, who only took 2 shots. Like, what happened to him?
So weird. I don't understand it. I know Darrell Arthur was good in his time, 21 minutes in his return, 10 and 4.
All the bench was good.
Yeah, Wilson Chandler at 17 and 6. Jamal Murray at 17 and 5. The whole bench was fantastic this game. Weird game for the Nuggets. I don't know what to take out of it.
I have no idea either. Like, the Faried thing, you know, he goes in and out of this doghouse in Denver so quick.
Yes.
And you have such a quality player like Wilson Chandler behind him, it's hard to fall in love with Kenneth Faried.
And that's the one. So that's like the one of them, the one point that doesn't surprise me, that Kenneth Faried would do, maybe not that, but that would let you down. Like, that's the one thing that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. And it's so funny, because certain players I know, like, I would have in my lineup like 3-4 days and know this run's going to run out, and it's going to run out quick. And Faried was that guy. He was at $4,000. He had, you know, he was on the bench, and all of a sudden he's getting playing time. Oh, he can go double-double because he can get 10 rebounds, 10. But you know that this is what's going to happen somewhere down the line. And that's why it's so important never to throw all your money in one night in daily fantasy, because a guy like Kenneth Faried is going to snake you.
Totally. Hey, let's take a break, speaking of daily fantasy, because when we come back, Tony and I will make a lineup for tonight. We're having a nice little preliminary lineup set here. And then we'll wrap it up and bring it up to the best friends forever. This is the Roto Expert in the Morning, and we wrap up. Final few minutes here on the Roto Experts. Tony and I try to make a DFS lineup before we go. So, Tony, let's start at the top with the point guard position. What do you like tonight?
I think tonight I'm going to go cheap at the point guard.
I agree.
And save a little cash, right? We're going to save a little cash at the point guard. And Ricky Jackson's the first one of the Detroit Pistons. I think he's still underpriced in a good matchup tonight. And then I'm going to go and I'm going to take a shot in San Antonio with DeJounte Murray. They have the highest team total. His price is only $3,800 on FanDuel. DraftKings $4,100. I expect Tony Parker to be out again tonight. They're the worst team in the league at covering the point guards. They're the worst team defensively. I'm going to take a shot here, and I'm going to save that money and spend it somewhere else.
It's interesting, because I was going to go cheap in two different places, right? I like the Patrick Beverley, $5,600 on FanDuel against Milwaukee. You know, they're okay against point guards, but Beverley, I still find to be underpriced with how good he has been as of late. $5,600, and he's just been tremendous over the past several days. I like him. I like Ray Felton, too, who's just under $5,000. He's still starting without Chris Paul in the lineup. No Blake Griffin, too. So at a $5,000 player, you're getting there with Ray Felton. So a lot of cheap point guards tonight. I think that should be the direction you go in, whether it's Murray, Felton, or Beverly. I like all three of them. Reggie Jackson, Tony's right.
I like Felton too in that game tonight. And in fact, if you play on one of the alternative sites like a fantasy draft where they're more liberal, where you can use these players,
right,
I would use 3 or 4 of these point guards in some of those flex positions that you can use.
Just because they're so cheap. Well, if you're saving money at the point guard position, I have to assume James Harden will be in there for your shooting guard.
Yes, he will. Now, if you don't want to use James Harden for whatever the reason, that could be an option. But I like Bradley Beal if you didn't want to go there and you're looking for someone else. But James Harden will be in my lineups tonight.
What about a small forward? Who do you like tonight?
Small forward. Now, Kawhi Leonard. The only problem here is could be a blowout. They have the highest team total. His price is less than LeBron James. It's less than Kevin Durant. I like him more than those two players tonight, so I would pay up for him in tonight's action at the small forward position.
But are you worried about him not playing, though?
I say this time and time again. I think we overdo this so many times. And I'm going to throw him in there tonight.
Okay.
He gets 30 points. I'm worried. It's a road game, too, right?
So, yes.
They're just so bad. He's on a roll. I mean, we're talking about 53 points, 51 points, 50 points in his last three games. That I'm not going to do this. I mean, San Antonio, say what you want. They're missing their starting point guard and their starting center.
Yep. Yep. All right, fair enough. Power forward and center quickly.
Power forward tonight, if you want to save a little money at the power forward position, I like tonight Markieff Morris. Gives you an opportunity. I like Thaddeus Young a lot.
All right, at center?
At center, you're going to go ahead and you're going to use Marcin Gortat or Hassan Whiteside.
There you go.
David Lee, love, also in that game tonight.
There you go. That's it for the Roto Experts for Tony Sakata. I'm Greg Sussman. Fantasy BFFs are next. Have a good day, everyone.